I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio, and you're listening to The Functional Nerds. This is going to be episode number 217.
All right. That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. He's a Hugo Award-winning podcaster for the SF Signal podcast. You can check him out at atfmb.com and follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John.
And John, do you know that I still don't have that Hugo Award? We're in December now, and I still don't have it.
That ain't cool at all.
I keep emailing them, and they're very cool. I mean, they're getting back to me, and they're like, yeah, you know, we just this and that and blah, 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 blah. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer because it still doesn't feel real.
Yeah. So, check out all that stuff. My name is John Anelio. You can check out my music and other things over at johnanelio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at John Anelio. Today we are joined by W.C. Bowers, although we're going to be calling him William throughout the episode, but his book is published under W.C. Bowers. He's got a brand new book out. It is called Unbreakable. It's out through Tor, and it is a military science fiction book, and it looks right up. If you're a listener of the show, this looks right up your alley. So, William, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
What's the publication date of the book? Is it out already? Is it coming
January
out?
13th. So oh, okay. We're just a little under, well, about 30 days now. 30 days.
Okay.
Now.
So, well, by the time this airs, because this will air in a couple weeks, this will air probably about a week or so before it comes out. So it'll be hopefully good
perfect.
Timing.
It's
so,
great timing.
So this is out through Tor, and you know, we were actually talking a little bit about this before we started recording, and you know, we were talking about how your book got to publication. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, because I know that this book started as a NaNoWriMo, a National Novel Writing Month novel. So maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit about that story, about how you started writing it and how it's now in a few weeks going to be a published book through Tor.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I've got to give my brother-in-law a shout out. He's a pastry chef at the only 5-star in Colorado and a writer. And he challenged me one year, you know, I'm doing this thing called NaNoWriMo. You should think about it. And I've had this story for a while percolating, hadn't done anything with it. And he knew about it. And he said, you ought to put it to paper and see what happens. So we started writing together, and it was great to have him encouraging me. I was encouraging him. And 50,000 words later, I had a really rough outline and put it to bed for a few months, but it kept nagging me. And my main character, her name's Promise, she wouldn't go away. She was like, you got to finish this thing. So I went back and I started tweaking it and working on it. And it came to life for me. And it got into my head and I couldn't let it go. And at some point I thought, you know, I think I have something here. I need to see where this goes. I need to play this out. So started looking for an agent. And that was really the next step. I don't know if you want to jump to that, but
well,
that's
you know,
sort
let
of
me
the
ask-
short end.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. Now, had you written much fiction before that? Like, do you have a background in writing fiction pre-NaNoWriMo?
No. I played with some shorts and never done anything with them. So NaNo was the first thing that really got me into writing.
Did you study writing at all? Like, were you like an English major or anything?
I got a degree in music. And,
okay, yeah.
I mean, so there's an artistic background to me. You know, I love the arts. I love music. I love theater. I love drama, painting, good literature. Grew up in a family of readers. So my parents, mom in particular, was always feeding me books. And so I had that background, that love of good literature. But as far as writing goes, I ought to say I went back to grad school in speech communication. So I got an MA in rhetoric. That was very academic. Academic kind of writing, and not at all that useful to eat off of. So,
if it makes you feel any better, I went to college and got an FU in BS. So,
okay, there you go. You know what I mean?
How much time between your NaNoWriMo draft and the draft that you took to your agent, or that you used to shop an agent?
Yeah, you know, I took about a good year to clean stuff up. Mm-hmm. And it was not a consistent year. I mean, it was like a couple months here, and then it would sit. I didn't have a deadline, and I really work best under pressure. So it was a very leisurely pace, working at my own rate. But I took about a year. and before I felt like, okay, I'm ready for some outside eyes to see this and to query an agent.
Cool. And so and then you found a great agent who you told us about before we started recording. And what was that process like? Like how fast did it just take to get it purchased?
So that was a really great experience, and hopefully this will be informative for your listeners. I took a solid year. I mean, it took me a solid year to find an agent, which according to some people that's pretty fast. I've talked to folks who they've spent 2, 3, 4 years and maybe haven't found an agent. So I count myself very fortunate. But I had a list of 30 science fiction fantasy agents. At least they knew that genre, were known for that genre. I started down the list and queried the top two, and I got really different reactions. One of the top agents, who will remain nameless, sent back a rather terse email that said, "I don't think this is sellable, and good luck to you." The other one was Cherry Wiener, who ended up picking me up, and those were the other person and Cherry were the first two I queried. And Cherry said, "I'm interested, but I'm swamped. If you don't have somebody in 6 months, come back and tell me that you're in my files, and I'll take a look." So 6 months went by. I had some polite rejections, a couple people that took a pretty serious look and asked for the whole thing, and ended up saying it's not right for me for whatever reason. And then I went back to Cherry, and she said, "I remember you. Give me 3 months to read it, and I will." I got an email from her 3 weeks later. She said, "I cheated. I put you to the top of the stack. I like it, but you need to fix some stuff. Let's talk." And then it took me a few more months of going back and forth with her as she saw how I responded to feedback. She was like, "Okay, I'm going to test you, and if you pass the test, I'll take you on." And thankfully, I did. So here I am.
Was that difficult for you to change things? I think as artistic people, we tend to be like, "Well, what do you know? Like, this is my thing." Like, you know, it sounds like you took it in good spirit and, you know, kind of trusted her. So what was that like for you?
Yeah, I should say that I at no point did she try to make the book into something that I didn't want it to be. And that was great. She was very much about, okay, here's where what I think you're after. This is how I think you can make it better. Are we on the same page? So it was very much collaborative. And from the get-go, she was like, "I want to make your stuff the best it can be." So that was great. And it was, you know, it was a little bit humbling. And I think it taught me you got to hold your stuff up with an open hand. You know, if you're going to put it out there, you got to let it go, and you got to be willing to take critique. So it was really good for me. I learned a lot from her. I continue to learn a lot from her.
Cool. Well, that's great then. And I'm happy that it happened for you. And, you know, I have a copy of the ARC sitting here and EARC and everything. I'm looking forward to reading it. And I hope our listeners will go out and cool. buy it when it comes out.
But I hope so too.
Well, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And William, why don't you go first and do your pick?
Well, I'm reading one of my favorite SF writers. His name's Jack McDevitt. Sure. He writes a series of books featuring the character Alex Benedict, who's this antiquarian in the future, and he's traveling through all these former human civilizations and picking up stuff and selling it for whatever he can. And they're just fascinating reads. So I'm reading the latest book called Coming Home, which is actually, if you haven't read a McDevitt book or an Alex Benedict book, you could start here easily because it provides you plenty of backstory. And they're just, I think they're fantastic reads.
Now, how many books are in that series?
You know, I think this is probably 7 or 8 in. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know Jack, I think he's a grandmaster. The guy's won the Hugo and the Nebula. He's done a lot of full-length works and shorts, and I feel like I'm sitting in a master class when I'm reading one of his books.
Yeah, because he's, you know, we've been doing the podcast for about 5 or 6 years, and I've gotten a couple of books of his books sent to me over the years, and I always kind of do put him in that light, but I've yet to read him. But from what you're describing, it sounds like it's something that I should put to the top of my list. If only I could read faster.
Yeah, I know. There's never enough time, but I would highly recommend him. He's fantastic.
I think my mom may have read that book, John, because I think okay. I got that as an ARC.
And yeah, I got a couple arcs too. Yeah.
And I think I got it right after Mom broke her leg. And so anytime I was getting arcs, she was going through them, you know, like, oh, can I read this one? Can I, you know, and so I'm like, sure, if you want to read one, but you got to write me a book review. And then she just kind of laughs and then doesn't write the book review. So she's lazy. Yeah. But yeah, you know, I think that's one of the ones that she stole out of my pile of arcs and was reading.
I should also say I got to meet Jack at Lone Star Con 2 years ago, 2013. Yeah, summer 2013. And what a gentleman. Mm. Just the real McCoy. I was so taken back by how kind and generous he was. I just signed with my agent, so I went up and introduced myself, and just a real gentleman.
Cool.
It's always nice when you hear that, you know. So that's great. Cool. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
Oh, I'm going very, very different this week, John.
Okay. All right.
I have been horribly, horribly amused by the salt and pepper commercials. Have you seen these where it's salt and pepper and oh, I forget her name, the DJ.
Spinderella.
Spinderella, yes. All three of them are
so
doing.
Funny, I know that.
Yes, and all three of them are doing these commercials with the song, you know, Push It.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's like the guy walks up to the door.
I don't think I've caught this yet.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I have either.
Guy walks up to a door, and he's pulling on the door, and it won't open. And suddenly Salt and Pepper are beside him, and they're going, push it. And they point to the door where it says push, and he pushes it. And then they go into the song, and it's like all these instances where they're telling people to push it. So there's a scene where all three of them are in an elevator with a person. The person gets on the elevator, and they go, push it. And they push, and it's like you could tell they're just having so much fun with themselves, right? And it just amused the hell out of me, because I remember when that song came out, and I remember being with my friends. And
gosh,
song,
how old was that song?
Oh, I don't even want to know.
It's a late 80s, early
80s.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I just remember it coming on the radio, and I'm sitting there, and I'm going, push it. And one of my friends looks at me and says, do you even fucking know what that song's about? And I said, I don't care. I have no clue. It's a great song. He's like, you're stupid.
Yeah.
Because apparently it's about sex, which I didn't understand at that time.
I kind of gathered that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, going along with
what assumption?
With Patrick's silly pick, I'm going to pick the last book that I finished, which is a book by the second book by Jim Gaffigan, who's a comedian that I like a lot. And his second book is called Food, A Love Story. And Jim Gaffigan talks about food a lot. He's the Hot Pockets guy. He's that comedian.
He's
made a career off of the Hot Pockets thing. So
much of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so his first book, which I loved very much, which is called Dad is Fat. Which, especially if you are a parent.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
That is well worth reading if you are a parent. Dad is Fat, because Jim Gaffigan has five children that are all under the age of, I guess, like 7 or 8. And they live, he and his wife and his five children live in a 2-bedroom apartment in New York.
Oh, wow.
So it is telling the story of living with five children in a small space in New York. And it is highly entertaining. So I picked that a few months ago, but this is his new book, which as a comedian, he travels around the country doing gigs. And because, you know, he's kind of a bigger fella and always talks about food no matter where he goes. You know, if he's going to be in Missouri, people in Missouri will be like, you got to go here to eat. And you got it. So it's basically, he does this whole write up of all the various foods throughout the country and how, you know, certain parts of the country do this kind of food better and certain parts do other types of food better and how some is nasty and some is great. And it's very entertaining. You know, Patrick, you know, we don't ever talk about barbecue, but he has a whole chapter on barbecue.
I was going to ask if there was some barbecue in there.
Yeah, there's definitely.
I know that's forbidden, but.
Yeah, but he talks about the stuff that is mentioned a lot with, you know, the Texas barbecue versus the Kansas City barbecue versus the all that. And he basically compliments Texas as the state that has lots of good stuff because you got your barbecue, you got your steak, you got your Mexican food. It's, you know, it's sort of a cornucopia of different types of eating that you can do down in Texas. But it's silly. It's a silly book written by a comedian. And if you just want a light, sort of funny read, it's good. I enjoyed both of his books very much. So
John, it's interesting because I did not know this, but Denver has a 24/7 comedy radio station.
No way.
And I just recently discovered it. 103.1.
Oh, okay.
And I just recently discovered it, and they just do little clips, and at the end of every clip they tell you who the comedian was. So you always know, like, if you want to go look it up. And it was funny because just the other night my brother and I took a quick little drive over to the store, and I had that on because I've been listening to it on my way home from work, and Lewis Black came on. And it was his thing about there is a center of the universe, there is a hell, and it's this one place in this one particular town where on opposite corners, both corners have a Starbucks. and he's like, I just want to know, I'm trying to figure it out. Who came to this corner and saw a Starbucks and saw the other corner and said, you know what this corner needs? A Starbucks. He's like, and I was trying to figure out who would the audience be? Who would the audience be for this? You know, who are the consumers that would need a Starbucks on one corner and a Starbucks on the corner opposite? And I finally figured out people with Alzheimer's. And the crowd goes, ooh. Right? He's like, no. He said, don't do that. Because the joke doesn't work any other way. He said, but think about it. You have Alzheimer's and you're in the Starbucks and you finish your cup of coffee and you get up and you walk outside. And as soon as you walk outside, here's another Starbucks. And you think to yourself, you know what would be good right now? A cup of Joe. Because you've already forgotten that you already had one. And we're listening to this and we're just laughing so hard in the car. It's like, it's one of those things where you pull up to the store and you don't get out of the car because you want to listen to the rest of it. You know, we're just listening. And then it comes up Lewis Black, and my brother goes, I don't even know who that guy is. And I said, well, he's actually kind of a controversial.
Yeah, he is. Definitely.
Just slightly.
Comic.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. And he's written some books too.
Just a smidge.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's cool. That's good to know that you have a station like that out there.
It's
that's
a trip. Yeah. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, let's get, so we all did our picks. So, you know, I had emailed William to have a couple things that we could talk about. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about was, that you have a degree in music. And obviously, listeners, longtime listeners of the show know that I have a degree in music and I'm a music teacher during the day and I write songs and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, I didn't know you were a music teacher. That's great.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing for 18 years now.
So okay.
A long time. So what is your degree in and what's your music background? I'm curious.
Yeah, it's a Bachelor of Arts in Vocal Music. So at one point, I had this idea that I was going to be an opera singer, and my voice is pretty light, so I can do musical theater, but opera not so much.
It's a very, you know,
it's tough.
Well, opera singing, you know, as I'm sure you know, it's a very different kind of singing because it is the style and the technique of it is to be heard over an orchestra.
Yep.
Without amplification.
Absolutely. You got to have a set of pipes.
Yeah, you got to really be able to belt. And it's not, I think sort of physically you have to have a certain something about you to be able to do that, you know?
We're not thinking fat, but that could help.
No, just you know, it's funny because...
Girth.
You know, well... Cause
no, I hear what you're saying. So you need to be a person of substance.
Well, the thing is it's... Voices are such mysterious things, and I think that's why, as human beings, to this day, we are still so enamored with singers, with great singers, because being a music teacher, and I teach vocal and instrumental music, I do the bands, and I do just general music for pre-K through fifth grade, I'm a believer that everybody can sing, that in the many years that I've taught, 18 years now, I've only come across two or three kids that couldn't match pitch, that couldn't, because if you talk to a lot of adults, many adults will claim that they are tone deaf. And I'm telling you that that is That is not true. They don't have experience singing, and they probably had some sort of traumatic experience in their youth where someone told them that they didn't sing well, and then they stopped singing. You know, which that's one thing that I do kind of fight against.
John, I'm going to completely rebuke everything that you just said, because I have been to karaoke bars.
Well, let me continue.
Well, you know, singing and alcohol, though, those two things don't always mix.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
But you don't want to judge the voice by the booze.
Absolutely, yeah. And because I just feel like everybody can sing, or just about everybody can match pitch.
Yeah, I would say most everybody. Yeah, my college roommate, notwithstanding, he could not match pitch.
Right. Well, there are some people. Like I said, it's not. But I think what I love in sort of studying, and I've been interested in different kinds of world music and folk music from different countries. And one of the things that I wish we had more of here is just this more sort of folk tradition of singing. You go to some cultures and it's just, you know, you go to England and Ireland and stuff, people just sing in the pub, and like, it's just a natural part of life is to sing. And I think we sort of put singers on a pedestal here, and it's like, some people can sing and some people can't, and that's it. And I wish there was more.
John. It all depends on where you live.
I guess so. Yeah, that's all right. I'm in New Jersey.
No, but I get what you're saying. We've so commercialized music.
Yeah.
And even like my son's playing cello now. He's in his second year. But there's already this push to churn out students for the next level of orchestra.
Right.
And the love of just getting lost in the music and enjoying it. And, you know, music can be for everybody. It doesn't have to just be competitive. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to just be a career track. Yeah, I think you're right. I think some of that's lost.
But John, you get into the southern states and people, everybody's kicking and grinning and singing. And I mean, my family, you can't go to Paducah and people not push guitars in your hand and say, here, play a couple tunes for us. And such and such is coming over and he's got his guitar and, you know, we're setting it up in the backyard. We want everybody to sing. And before you know it, you're sitting there going, you know, cowboys ain't easy to love and they're harder to hold.
Well, I think, Patrick, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's where I think a lot of that comes from, is because a lot of the settlers in the southern states were English and Irish and Scottish and all that. And I think they sort of carried that tradition. I think that's awesome. And that's what I wish we did more of. But, you know, one of the points that I was going to make is just that, yes, I think everybody can sing, but there is, and you can work at it and you can study technique and all of this stuff. But there is sort of a mystery about singing too, I think. And why, you know, some people, there are people that are, oh, I think it's a Kristen Chenoweth. She's like this little thing. Like she's like 5 foot.
She has an amazing voice. Yeah. It's just like monstrous.
Wicked? Didn't she do Wicked?
That's awesome. Yes.
She did Wicked, and she's done Glee. She was on Glee for a while. Mm-hmm. She's done a lot of stuff. Very talented.
So that's like one of those things where it's like this little tiny person who has this massive voice. And I think that's why we're so enamored. It's like, how is she making that sound? And like, so that's what I mean. It's like, there's a little bit of, you know, I think it's one of the things that attracts us to the arts is that, like I just was saying that we should all sing, but most people can't sing like that. Even if they work at it for a long time, they're not going to sound like that. So I think there's something sort of mystical, I guess, in some ways about singing.
No, totally. It totally is.
And so did you actually fully get your degree?
Hold on. Before you go there, John, I want to point out that longtime listeners know I sing more on this podcast than you, the music teacher, ever do.
I know. Well, because I, even though that's what I do during the day,
That's typically musician. You're shy about your art when you're not on the stage.
Right.
I totally get that.
Because I think Patrick is sort of talking, being from spending some of his youth in the southern states, where it's like, we'll just sing a song. And it's like, that's not the way it is
swinging
here.
Swinging doors, a jukebox, you know? And a bar stool.
Yeah, I think it's awesome.
My new home has a flashing neon sign.
You know, have some southern roots in you, yeah?
Yeah, he does.
Absolutely.
I'm pure East Coast, so that's that. But cool. Well, that's you know, on a totally different note, though, I do want to, before we start running out of time, the other thing that I found really interesting is about you is that you have a black belt.
I do, yeah.
So how long have you been studying martial arts?
So I'm in my third year. Okay. And I'm planning to test in February for my second degree. And after that, I want to become, I'm also studying to be an assistant instructor at my dojo, which is Korean for school. So love the martial arts, love the discipline, love the art. It's a way of life too, the meditation. It's become a big part of my life. So
you've only been doing it for 3 years and you've already gotten a black belt.
I started late. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And I pushed hard. Mm-hmm. For an adult, 2.5 to 3 years of solid study, you can get your black belt. And then for a child, it's a little longer. Like my son just earned his junior black belt, and it took him about 3 years.
Okay. So now, how many times a week are you working on that then?
You know, I'm trying to take 4 classes a week, mm-hmm. and then I'm doing some stuff at home. So, you know, coming into testing time, I'm at the Dojang more. Mm-hmm. And I have never experienced the kind of peace that I encounter when I step onto the mat and I start working out. It's like everything else melts away and I'm just focused. My you know, writing, work, all the to-dos, all the stuff, just mm-hmm. it's not there. So that it's for me, it's serenity and mm-hmm. I love it.
So William has an alert on his phone to tell him when someone tags him in a tweet, I think.
Yeah, I think I do too. Are you picking that up? Sorry about that.
No. Well, no. I just tweeted you and it dinged in your phone at the same time.
Oh, so. Did it? Yeah. I got my iPad sitting next to me. Oh, yeah. Singing on the Functional Nerds podcast. Here we go.
That's really – so let me ask you this, you know, with the Taekwondo. So you've only been doing it for a few years. Is this something – now your book is a – you know, it's kind of being – put out there and promoted as a military science fiction book. Does having this experience doing your Taekwondo, does that affect writing fight scenes and things like that?
Oh, absolutely. And I can envision, you know, I can get on the mat and I can envision, okay, if I throw a kick this way, what does that do to me? What does that do to the person I hit? Because there's, you know, there's simple physics. It's reaction. It's you know, equal opposite reaction to every action that you take. So it's been really helpful. And I have some folks that I can go and ask questions to, like, you know, how would this work? And would this really be the way you'd hit somebody? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it helps me ratchet up the violence in the books in an inauthentic way.
That's great. You know, I on one podcast I was listening to a while ago, they were talking about some of the MMA stuff and the mixed martial arts things, which I know is a totally different thing.
That's like crazy. I mean, that's like borderline.
It seems like what you get at it, or one of the things you get out of it, is the whole discipline of it, and the, as you said, the meditation and all of that. And I know when you get into MMA, it's, you know, it's pretty violent. So I don't know if that's something.
I thought about doing a cage match for a short period of time, and, mm-hmm. and actually, believe it or not, the gal who's the director for my youngest son's preschool, her family also go and they take in MMA fights for fun. Mm-hmm. And a friend of hers has done a number of MMA fights and he's had his jaw broken a couple times. And as soon as I started, ouch. You know, some of the injuries, mm-hmm. common injuries, I'm like, I'm a dad of three. I got a lot, mm-hmm. right. I got a lot of responsibilities. I can't afford to have my jaw busted open. So
yeah.
Pass.
I wrestled when I was in high school and, you know, I saw something. I'm trying to think where I saw the post because I fortunately didn't get it, but I think you get this in MMA sometimes too. And they had this article. I feel like it was IO9 or Tor, because IO9 and Tor, it's funny, even though they're so, you know, science fiction driven, they'll just sometimes have like a scientific study or sure. just something that's like just kind of has nothing to do with science fiction, but it's just kind of interesting anyway. And I think it was one of them. They had something about what is cauliflower ear? And they had this like one college wrestler with like the cauliflower ears, and they were talking about it, and I'm just like, oh yeah, I remember that because if you're
it's ugly. Yeah. And the contraption to drain all the fluid away and
Yeah, because it's just like when you're fighting, you know, I always said this when I wrestled, and I wasn't a particularly good wrestler, and I only did it my first 2 years of high school, but I liked it a lot because I played football too, and I liked wrestling a lot more. Because it was an individual sport, because it was, you know, a lot of times when you play sports, there could be political things that go on with it where some guys get started over you and whatever. But so what I liked about wrestling was win or lose, it's you. And when you get beat, you get beat. And so I really loved wrestling for that. And but what I found was just that I always tell people, I'm like, when you're wrestling, and I suspect it's the same with Taekwondo, and you're in a match, it's so draining because it is so kind of like fight or flight, where like you're totally engaged in that moment, and you're trying. Let me tell you, I got pinned a bunch of times, especially my first year. And my very first wrestling match, I got pinned in 39 seconds. Mm-hmm. I got demolished by this guy. And that is not a great feeling when you get just completely overpowered. And I think it's a good thing to go through that.
It's a good learning experience. I have not done tournaments, so I need to confess that. I do show up and spar, and there aren't a lot of adults starting Taekwondo at my age. I'm 38. So most of the time, guys my age that are doing Taekwondo have been doing it for 30 years.
Right.
So that's partly why I don't enroll in tournaments, because I'd have my head handed to me.
Right.
Because it's once you get to black belt, you're thrown in with other black belts regardless of how long you've been training. So I'm But I will end up sparring. There's some adults there, but oftentimes I'm sparring kids that are like 12, 13, 14 years old. And I tell you, I have come home where I've had a 14-year-old kid just – kick the fire out of me. And, you know, I came home with one injury where my middle finger was not the same for about 3 months. I couldn't bend it. Mm-hmm. So I'm very mindful of, you know, things don't heal as fast at this age as they do for you.
Yeah, exactly. When you're a kid, bounce right back. I'm sorry, Patrick.
No. And John, when you were going out for wrestling in high school, I was going out for Dungeons and Dragons.
Right. Yeah.
I went through my gaming phase too. I did BattleTech. So,
nice.
So,
well, I graduated. Yeah. You know, I did Dungeons and Dragons and Star Frontiers and Star Trek and all Robotech, the role playing game, and all that kind of stuff. So, so while you were doing, you know, the wrestling thing, John, I was you know, getting a little carpal tunnel in my wrist from, you know, throwing the dice on the table, and yeah, it was kind of it was rough, It was rough. I still haven't fully healed from those injuries to that wrist.
I'm glad I had the experience of playing football and wrestling in high school, but it wasn't me. And when I started playing guitar when I was like 15 or 16, I was like, oh, yeah, this is what I should be doing because I really like this a lot and I'm good at it, instead of being a very mediocre football player and wrestler. You know, I was sort of a coach's favorite because, as kind of like what William was saying in the beginning, like I took feedback really well and I worked hard. So coaches loved me, but still wouldn't really play me because I wasn't all that good.
That was my experience. Yeah. I was the little guy. My freshman year, I was 5'3". So in my senior year, I kept growing until I was 19, but my senior year in high school, I was topping out at 5'6". So, you know, I could take feedback, but I sucked.
Yeah.
So it's like, plus, you know, when you're on the field, you don't get that +2 modifier for natural aptitude. So.
Well, I played baseball prior to high school. And I played basketball prior to high school, but when I got to high school, I didn't want to. And I did actually spend my high school career, as John will tell you, I'm a fairly small guy. And, I'm topping out at like 6'2", 6'3". And I spent my high school career essentially avoiding the football coaches because we had a really shitty football team. Mm-hmm. Both JV and varsity were just horrible, and they would see me, and it was like, you know, you'd suddenly have all these really old guys running up to you going, hey, son, do you play football? Have you ever thought about playing football? You know, but it's like, no, not on this team.
Yeah, if you're over 6 foot and look to be in the 200-pound range, they are going to be after you because they can work with size.
And then that translated to when I graduated high school, I kept getting all these phone calls from military recruiters.
Mm.
You know, they're like, hey, we saw you at the blah, 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 blah. And, you know, you'd be perfect for the Marines. You'd be perfect for this. You'd be perfect. And I'm like, no, I would not.
Yeah. See, I didn't get recruited for that. There was one event at school, the stuff as many kids as you can into a beetle. I was the first one in on the floor in the very back. So I was like the popular kid for the day.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I think that's kind of a nice place to wrap it up then. Well, thanks for joining us today. So let me just give a little bit of a rundown here before we go. So the book Unbreakable is coming out on January 14th. Is that what you said the date was?
January 13th.
January 13th. So look for it then when it comes out. Will's website is WC Bowers, which is BAUERS.com. You can check out his website there. And on Twitter, same thing. It's at WC Bowers. So check out his website, follow him on Twitter and all that. Will, do you have any upcoming
comments? I would also suggest that people tweet him a lot.
Yes. Let's that way he gets lots of dings on his iPad.
Yeah, let's see how many dings can get going, you know, and just really, really start to annoy him.
I want to be annoyed. I need to grow my fan base here. Absolutely. Love to meet all of you. So,
so Will, do you have any con appearances or anything like that coming up?
You know, right now I've got a couple of events booked. I'm going to be at Tattered Cover in Highlands Ranch on the 14th. I'm looking at cons for next year. So
Mile High Con?
Yeah. I got to figure out what the con schedule is going to look like, but I definitely want to
hook you up with Rose.
And at the end of the year, the Science Fiction Fantasy Con.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else you want to tell our listeners about before we wrap it up here?
No, I'm super excited. I think you're going to enjoy the book. Please check it out. And appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity and get the chance to chat with you a bit. So this has been great.
Oh, no, our pleasure, and best of luck with it. For us, you know, speaking of cons, Patrick and I are going to be the media guests of honors at Capricorn. That is in Chicago, or the Chicago area. That is
Chicagoland.
Yeah, awesome. So we're excited about that. And
John's buying all the sliders at White Castle. So
I'm there. I'm down with it.
White Castle. All right.
Matt Forbeck is going to, I believe, is the author guest of honor. And Stephen Jackson of Stephen Jackson Games is going to be there. And lots of other cool folks. And so, we'll be there and hopefully doing some live shows and all that kind of stuff.
So, John, did you get the email from the liaison asking, you know, if there's any special foods or anything you want in the green room?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, did you reply cannoli and sliders? Or is that just
no, me? No, I didn't. I told them that I'm still on that slow carb diet. So, you know, if you could put some, like, you know, vegetables and some nuts and things like that there.
No, cannoli and sliders, come on.
Well, on Saturday when I have my cheat day, then I'll be eating a lot of cannoli and sliders on that day, man. So that should be fun.
Italian beef. We need Italian beef sandwiches. We need cannoli. We're just going to go down the entire menu of my childhood. So we need Italian beef sandwiches. We need cannoli. We need
deep
sliders,
dish pizza, right?
We need deep dish pizza. We need the other pizza too. The other Chicago style, the flat style pizza.
I'll have two different kind of pizzas in the same meal.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely. We're going to need tons of all kinds of other stuff. We need to find some good brats. We need Chicago dogs. We need Chicago dogs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should just get like a 6-pack of Old Style just so I could tell my brother that we had Old Style.
Well, you know what? I think Patrick and I are going to both be like 20 pounds heavier after.
I think so too. You have to eliminate those cheat days for the next year.
Yeah. But we're very excited about that. So please come on out. If you're in the Chicago area, come on out. And if not, sounds like a pretty cool con just to go to. So if you're someone who just likes to go to cons, you know, even if you drive out far or fly out, then you should come check us out there. So that should be fun. Patrick, what do you have going on other than that?
Well, it depends on how Kirkus is going to do their schedule during the holidays. Technically, my next post is scheduled to come out on Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know as of this recording whether or not it did or not. If it did, then there is a review of the Black Widow Volume 1. On Kirkus. Otherwise, it might be like the following week. So I'm not sure on that. So I've done Captain Marvel, and then I did Rocket Girl, and now Black Widow. So those are all over in Kirkus. Those are great things. We did a ton of year-end roundups at SF Signal on the podcast. So we did the gift-giving guide, which is already probably too late for most people. We did the best of, you know, that kind of stuff. So I suggest and encourage people to go over there. We also did an episode with James Gates where we talked about the weird. And we had, you know, the Vandermeers on and a bunch of other people. So cool. definitely tell people, go check that out.
Sweet. All right, everybody. We hope you have a good week, and we'll see you next time.
Sunsmoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home.